Hey, this is JJ Virgin. Welcome and thanks so much for joining me. This is Ask the Health Expert. Here I put the power of health in your hands and give you access to the top people in health and wellness. In each episode, I share safe ways to get healthy, lose weight, heal your gut, detox, and lots more. So if you want to get healthy and get off the dieting for life merry-go-round, I'll give you strategies that will help you look and feel better fast. Hey, it's JJ, and today we are talking about something I know personally, I have such a big personal experience with, and that is stress and anxiety. Not that I wanted to have a personal, big personal experience with it, but if you've been around my community or if you've read Warrior Mom or Miracle Mindset, you know that I went through one of the most stressful events a parent can have, which is almost losing my child. And so I know intimately what stress can do to you at extreme ways. But really, we're going to talk more today about what ongoing stress can do. But more importantly, what are some of the things that you can do about it? Like, what is it doing to you? Why is it creating all that anxiety, belly fat? You know what I'm talking about, all those different things that stress can do. And then what can you do and how can you start to shift your diet? And is the ketogenic diet going to be the right diet for you? And if so, how would you use the ketogenic in a way here that it wouldn't create more stress for you? I'm excited to talk about that because it comes up so often in the community as to when you should use the ketogenic diet and what to do if you're under stress. And we are going to be talking about that today, and I have the perfect person to talk about it. She is the author of the Anti-Anxiety Diet and the Anti-Anxiety Diet Cookbook, as well as Naturally Nourished. It is integrative functional dietitian Allie Miller. She's a fellow paleo FXer who has been deep in the research on the ketogenic diet and using it in her clinic, and has a really cool approach, whole foods approach to doing that, and doing cycling carbohydrates in a way to support your thyroid, your adrenals, and your hormonal balance. So she also has a podcast, Naturally Nourished. And I will be linking to all of this in the show notes, as well as her 2-week meal plan, which you can get at jjvirgin.com/ Allie Miller. You are definitely going to want to get more information and get some of these recipes when you start to hear her share some of them. Oh my gosh, that's all I have to say. And they're super easy. Now, before we dive in, I want to do a shout out to Francie E., who said, thanks for the handhold, 5-star review in Apple iTunes. And she says, JJ, thank you so much for your recent episode, number 328, What to Eat and When. Finally, a step-by-step, easy-to-follow way of eating that makes sense. I've been listening to you for a few months now and have thoroughly enjoyed each and every episode. I love that you get right to the point and tell us exactly what we need to do and why. You're an amazing example yourself, and you obviously walk the talk, and that is a huge motivator for me to continue listening. Thank you for what you do. Please keep the amazing content coming. Well, thank you so much for that. Now, before we dive in with Allie, and you'll be able to get this again at jjvirgin.com/ Allie Miller, A-L-I Miller. Before we dive in, I want to share a favorite with you. All right, Allie Miller, welcome to the show. Super glad to have you here, especially after all the false starts.
Yes, I'm thrilled to be here, JJ. It's going to be a great conversation.
Yes, for everybody listening, we tried to record this and like our recording stuff wouldn't work. And then we tried another platform. I'm like, oh my gosh, it just made me more determined.
That means it's going to be epic. Yes.
That's it. All right, so I'd love to dive in since we are going to be talking about anxiety. I want to know, like, why the heck did you get interested in anxiety?
Yes. So I've been practicing functional integrative medicine for over a decade, and I've really come to the conclusion that whether I'm addressing leaky gut or hormone imbalance or metabolic distress, autoimmune disease, that if the individual is in a chronic state of stress and they're not balanced in that parasympathetic rest regulatory function. If they're running on a high stress demand and they're dealing with anxiety, that this really is the Achilles heel to balanced wellness in the body.
Now, what I really want is your personal story. I was like waiting to hear, I was a stress bomb.
Oh, true. Yes. This like, happened okay. too.
All right. Let's pull back that kimono too.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I was at Bestyr University, which is a naturopathic college of medicine. And I was actually a vegan and I was doing a stint of raw vegan diet, which now in hindsight, you know, I was really lining up a lot of gut
stressors.
Were you
just gassy and bloated the entire, like I did
Absolutely.
That too. It was a disaster.
Talk like about lectins and anti-nutrients. Yes, yes, most definitely. And that was before I was in good practice of using digestive enzymes. So all of that, of course.
Yikes.
But you know, leading into the vegan before raw vegan, I was doing a lot of the Vital Wheat gluten or seitan. I was doing a lot of soy. I was eating, like I said, a lot of anti-nutrients in raw roughage, and I ended up going to the same naturopathic clinic that I was working at as a student for care because I was dealing with severe brain fog, shortness of breath. I was dealing with racing thoughts. I would have to pull over my car, and I was having really severe palpitations. And come to find out, my ferritin levels, which is a marker of your iron storage in the body, were at a 2. Usually, you start losing hair when they dip below 60. And so I was very severely anemic. I had B12 deficiency. And it was at that point that I kind of determined if food was going to be my medicine, that I had to transition my diet and bring in animal products. And I started to transition to more of like a GAPS diet and then started to layer some of these other functional medicine elements.
Okay. Well, you just spoke something that no one will know what the heck you're talking about, which is a GAPS diet.
Sure.
So fill everybody in on that transition just so they'll understand.
Yes. So this is the work of Natasha McBride and Dr. Natasha McBride, and it stands for Gut and Psychology Syndrome, GAPS. And it was one of the older kind of with along the guidelines of Weston A. Price. And it is a diet that focuses highly on bone broth. And it is a grain-free diet. Essentially, an easy way to explaining it is like a paleo approach where they remove longer chain carbohydrates. And so it'll tie in the specific carbohydrate diet is another term, or the SCD diet, which we'll use in clinic for a lot of autoimmune and inflammatory bowel disorder. But Natasha McBride started to talk about the gut connection to the brain. And that had a lot of aha strings with me. And I started to find within myself really feeling grounded again, the more animal product that I brought in and the more fats that I brought into my diet.
So I love all this. Little background. Back when I was a vegan, and I did vegan, I did raw vegan, like, because everything I'm going to go take it to the extreme, right?
Totally.
Like, can't just be a vegetarian. Nope. Got to go vegan. Nope. Can't just be vegan. And this was back in the days, like this was 25, 30 years ago. So I was ahead of my time. But I remember going to the doctor, same issue. And at the time, I didn't know any functional medicine. I just know that he looked at my labs and he said, either go eat some meat or we're putting you in the hospital. You decide.
Sure.
Yeah, I think this is an easy decision. So,
all right.
Now let's kind of dig in now because we're going to dig into anxiety.
Yes.
And we're also going to like, one of the things I like to do is break it apart and assume that, you know, a lot of these words that will say like parasympathetic, people
yes.
go, what?
Totally.
So let's kind of look at stress because a little stress is good.
Yes.
Too much stress is bad. So let's like talk about stress and how you look at it and, you know, how it can, what all it affects and, you know, how do we get back into balance?
Yes. And I think that we can all acknowledge whether we align with the term anxiety or we feel that we experience anxiety, I think we can all acknowledge that we're under high amounts of stress and we could all benefit from being a little bit more resilient. So when we're in a stress response, the body, the autonomic nervous system, which is what regulates our central nervous system, our brain through our spine, and provides feedback to our body, it goes into fight or flight mode. And we still have a lot of the survival mechanisms as if the stress itself is a physiological stressor, meaning like we're running from a saber-toothed tiger or a cheetah or whatever. And so this type of response is a survival mechanism that has a lot of hormonal influence, a lot of inflammatory regulating and blood sugar regulating impact on the body. And if only activated during short-term survival mode, would be fine. But the issue is that when many of us are stressed now, we might be stressing going through a gnarly divorce. We may be dealing with stressor of a lifestyle change. It could be financial, could be a move, could be something positive like planning a wedding. But if we're in this running fight or flight mode with the many lists of the things to do and constantly feeling on in this reactive mode, we start to have distress in the body, which could impact our blood sugar levels. So when we're in fight or flight mode, the body's going to dump glucose into the bloodstream as a survival quick-acting fuel. That can drive even more of a kind of mountain peak and valley effect where we can drop to low blood sugar status and get in that hanger mode where we're shaky or nauseous or with brain fog and looking for another sugar pick-me-up, and that can create definitely a vicious cycle. We can also have unfavorable blood pressure effects from stress. We can have unfavorable GI distress because our blood flow generally likes to stay in the central area of the body. But when we're in fight or flight mode, the blood flow goes out to the appendages, so out to our hands and our feet, away from our vital organs. So this means that when we eat at a stressed environment, we actually don't absorb as many of the nutrients. We're not in that rest, digest mode, the fancy word being parasympathetic place. And if digestion is not optimized, that means that we don't have optimal hydrochloric acid. We don't make as many digestive enzymes. We're only making about a quarter of the amount of digestive enzymes in a stressed space. And then we don't have that blood flow in the intestines to pull in the nutrients. So we're setting ourselves up for blood sugar dysregulation, blood pressure, other metabolic distress, and we can set ourselves up for the roller coaster of the blood sugar response and nutrient deficiencies.
All right. So that's a mess.
Yeah. And that's without even talking cortisol, because that's a whole other mechanism.
I know. I remember when I first started looking at stress, I'm like, all right, so basically it's going to age you quicker. It's going to make you gain weight, especially around your belly. It's going to mess up your sex drive. You're like, okay, you mm-hmm. know, but yet we're, you know, it's not like you can say, all right, so kids, I'm going to send you to a boarding school. I'm firing my boss. You know, I mean, we live in this world. So what do we do?
Yeah, and we have to choose our stressors. I think it's a good point, JJ, because, you know, if we think of stress as a positive, like I said, a wedding or something, exercise could be a stress. Intermittent fasting could be a stress. The ketogenic diet that I'm a big proponent of could be a stress. And so we have to think of our stress like a wardrobe. And if we're going to add on new stressors, even if they're positive, we do have to be mindful of what things we need to pull out or what things we're going to release. Because the classic person I see in clinic is the type A female that is trying to do everything, and they're undersleeping and undernourishing, and it just perpetuates this wired electric imbalance, which keeps us feeling like a chicken with our head cut off, you know, just kind of running around and pecking without really being in that grounded space. And that's when we really start to see the body, you know, starting with a whisper, but it starts to scream when it has these imbalances from chronic stress response.
So you kind of slid something in there, Allie, about keto and stress.
Yeah.
And I know you do a lot with the ketogenic diet. And I think it's really interesting. Like, my basic philosophy on diets is they all work. We just need to know which one to use for which situation.
Love it.
And that's the big challenge. Like, everyone's like, this is the diet. I go, no, this is the diet for that person at that time.
Love it.
You know? And so let's talk about the ketogenic diet and when it could be appropriate, what to do. Like, I'm sure you see people coming in, they're stressed out, they're gaining weight because they're stressed out, and they're like, but I'm going to do a keto diet. Like, you know,
right.
Let's talk about a keto diet, what it is, when it's appropriate, when it might be appropriate to do more carb cycling. Let's unpack that.
Okay. Okay. So a little 101 on keto and how it's connected to anxiety and stress. You know, when the body goes low carbohydrate, we all, going back to that kind of saber-toothed tiger comparison of an ancestral model, you know, we as the human body is developed are supposed to be a hybrid, meaning that we run on both glucose and ketones. So yes, there's big waves. You know, Atkins had a wave a couple decades back. Now we're waving with nutritional ketosis. But we've used for long periods of time when food was scarce and when we were between, you know, hunting and gathering models, the ability of ketones to help to fuel our body. And babies in utero use ketones as about 40% of their fuel source. So this isn't something that's scary or buzz and shock and awe, but the body does have to be in a restricted carbohydrate state to start to produce a nutritional level of ketones as a hybrid secondary fuel to glucose. And this generally means that we're pulling out like all starchy vegetables, fruits, grains, and somewhere around like a total of 30 to 40 grams of carbs a day. Now, why would we want to do this? One thing that we need to be mindful of is that when we make ketones, they're a cleaner burning fuel. So they put out less oxidative stress in the brain. You know, so when we're talking about inflammation, aging, ketones and making a therapeutic level by restricting carbs in the diet could be one way to reduce oxidative stress and reduce inflammation. Ketones also cross the blood-brain barrier, and this is a mechanism more direct for anxiety. They have an ability to upregulate GABA, and GABA is an inhibitory neurotransmitter. It's like the mellower outer, the ultimate chill pill in many ways, shapes, and forms. If we're dealing with a stress response where we're having dryness in the mouth or tremors, shakiness, generally speaking, GABA is going to help to mitigate or stop that stress response and physiologically calm us down. So it's a great tool to have in our tool belt when we're running in a chronic stress demand. When those ketones cross the blood-brain barrier, they upregulate the GABA expression. So it helps to give us a little bit of mellow through our hustle. And then the ketones also have an ability to downregulate epinephrine. And epinephrine, in layman's terms, is thought of as adrenaline. And so that's one of the mechanisms where nutritional ketosis is a tool for seizure activity. It reduces the excitatory neuroimpulse, and it helps to provide the mellow out regulatory neuroimpact.
So then when would it be okay to use with someone who's stressed, and when might be an additional stressor that would create more problems?
Yeah. So there's a complex web of this in the sense that, you know, again, it's healthy to run in keto and, you know, have glucose levels also that regulate. So you're off of that mountain peak and valley blood sugar distress. But there's another hormone to mention, which kind of creates this carb cycling language, which is leptin. Leptin is a hormone that is a regulator of satiety. And I really feel like with all of this work with anxiety and stress that the name of the game is help the body feel safe. Help your body to feel safe and not threatened, and your body will thank you and respond favorably. So leptin is a hormone that is made in the body in response to the consumption of fat. So it's made in the small intestine. When we eat fat, we produce more leptin, and that should give the body signal that we're satiated or full. It helps to upregulate metabolic processes, so it can help with body fat burn. And leptin also can be manufactured from the loss of your body fat as fuel. So fat is a big regulator of leptin. We have leptin receptors throughout our body. We have main on the HPA axis, which is that fight or flight response in the hypothalamus of the brain, on the thyroid and on the ovaries. So here's where it becomes important for carb cycling. In an individual that is under high stress, they tend to burn through leptin because it's a safety valve, right? So they burn through leptin at higher amounts. Now, an individual that's also of a low body fat, which isn't making leptin from their body fat reserves, is going to be more prone towards low leptin. And an individual that has any hypothyroid history because there's receptor sites on the thyroid, or is going through hormonal cycling of an age of, you know, someone who is menstruating because there's those receptors on the the ovaries. If the woman is low body fat and high stress, generally speaking, I recommend that they implement carb cycling. And the reason for this is that, again, the leptin levels go down with low body fat and stress. And so often in a ketogenic diet, because of the regulation of appetite, a woman such as myself, 35-year-old running a clinic, doing all the things, may forget to eat. And it's a blessing and a curse, right? To not have an appetite, to feel very regulated for once and not deal with food cravings. But if you do not eat enough grams of fat, the leptin levels can go too low, and that may create hormonal or thyroid distress.
So I love all this explanation, because I feel like people are either on the keto bandwagon or not. They're either against it or for it. I go, it's, you know, and I get asked all the time, should I do a keto diet? I'm like, it depends.
Yeah.
You know, it depends. And in general, unless, you know, you've got seizures, it's something I would say you'd be cycling anyway. You wouldn't be on it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about how you approach it, because I think one of the other challenges is, and you see it whether we're talking vegan or paleo or keto, whatever diet there always becomes the junk food diet version of that diet. Like,
totally.
Right? I mean, there always is. I'm like, oh my gosh. I remember when I first started pulling people off gluten, and this client came in and she goes, okay, I found it. And she like had all this junk. I go, what is this? You know, she had gluten-free cookies and cupcakes. I go, what? Wait a minute. Wait, no.
Absolutely.
That's not it. So how do you walk someone through the ketogenic diet?
So I think that we have to start with, if we're using food as medicine, we have to be eating whole real foods, just bar none, right? So I'm totally in that mindset of, you know, we can't put the blinders on and say, oh, but it's keto approved, or it's been stamped with this name, or, you know, this company states that this is a good thing. I take a really unique approach with keto and whole food approach, in the sense that I don't use any non-caloric sweeteners. So for many people, when they're making a keto version of, like you just said, cupcake, cookie, you name it, they're using a sugar alcohol like xylitol or erythritol, or they're going to be using a blend of one of those products with maybe stevia, or they may be using another form of a non-caloric sweetener. There's a new kid on the block called allulose, and there's always something. And my perspective is of the sense, and in my book, I actually have a section called Why I Hate Non-Caloric Sweeteners, because I'm pretty passionate about it. I feel like if we're trying to do a lower carbohydrate diet, we may have had an unhealthy relationship with food, and it may have been an unhealthy relationship with carbs. And, you know, replacing one abusive boyfriend with another one wearing a veil that still tastes hyper palatable and is not a natural profile is going to perpetuate sugar addiction or the craving for sweet. So I'm really in this mindset of channeling savory. So that
I'm with you. This is what I teach in the sugar impact diet.
Love it. So, love it. Yeah. You know, and it's like, it's a big win for me when a client says, oh my gosh, Allie, I never knew that a macadamia nut was sweet. You know, it's like, yeah. And you know, I like to freeze macadamia nuts and have 10 macadamia nuts frozen that like melt in your mouth with 10 fresh blueberries. And it's a fantastic sweet treat. So I really like the palate reset that comes with breaking up with non-caloric sweeteners. And I, for that same reason, find value in incorporating small amounts of whole food sweeteners. So I have like a low carb collagen zucchini muffin recipe that uses a banana. And I mean, you should see the internet. Oh, but I have to ketofy this and add a cup of erythritol and pull that banana. And I'm like,
does not take the banana out. Oh my gosh.
No. Well, A, right. There's other functions of the banana as a binder and whatnot, right? But you know, a 12th of a banana provides less than 5 grams of total carbohydrate. And
I did a big shift too. Like when I wrote the Sugar Impact Diet, my whole goal was to get people to get their sweet tooth back in check.
Yeah.
And to appreciate spicy and savory and sour. And so first I was looking at things. I'm going, okay, we got to look at bananas differently. There are super ripe bananas. Now that might be something you'd use a little bit for a sweetener. There's green bananas. They're a totally different food. And that's where these things can also get very, very confusing,
yes.
Right? Like, you know, a green banana rich in resistant starch is going to be incredible. So
especially if you cook that in coconut oil and add a little bit of cinnamon.
There you go. Cinnamon. Oh my gosh. Like cinnamon's the ultimate perfect sweetener.
Yes. Yes.
It's absolute perfection with balancing blood sugar and everything else. So there's a lot of options out there. And I know that you're going to give everyone your food as medicine meal plan, which I'm super excited about. 2-week food as medicine meal plan. Cause we didn't even get to, let's talk. I mean, we're a little bit over time, but let's just throw out a couple of your favorite superfoods. Cause I always like to know what everybody, you know, all the other nutritionists are eating out there.
Totally. So, I mean, I'm a big fan of bone broth. I just am. And that's one of my biggest recommendations for people when they're dealing with distress, to just do like a 2 to 3 day bone broth reset. Really great for gut integrity. The collagen and gelatin are like a facelift for the gut. And in the 2-week meal plan, I have a really fantastic, it's a cream of spinach or cream of kale, and it uses full fat coconut milk and leafy greens that you just blend in with garlic into your already made, you know, bone broth. So really fantastic.
Yummy.
Yeah. And, you know, it just kind of takes away the sipping on hot meat juice. Some people don't dig that all the time.
That doesn't sound so great when you say it that way. Yeah. But
well, I get that in Texas because it's triple digits here like all the time. People are like, you want me to do what, Allie?
Yeah, so, I'm in Florida. I get it. Although we made some oatmeal recently. Like I had to do this on the Dr. Oz show and I'm like, okay, it sounds kind of gross. But we made savory oatmeal with bone broth.
Ooh. Yes.
It's so good. Like with shiitake mushrooms and spinach and garlic. I go, okay, wow. Crazy. So it's amazing what you can do with bone broth, but I never thought of using coconut milk and spinach. And I'm going to admit it right here. I don't like kale. And you know what? I think that I'm not alone. And so I'm not going to like kale. I know that I'm like, you know, that's not cool, but I don't. All right. So we've got that one. What, give us another couple.
Yep. So I also have an excellent matcha gelatin pudding. And so this uses, so green tea, which is dried and ground, the leaf in the form of matcha is going to be rich in L-theanine. And L-theanine is a fantastic regulator for your brain chemistry. It drives your alpha brainwave activity, which is what is seen during concentration, creativity, REM cycles of sleep. So it also kind of helps you to mellow out your hustle through a day of stress. It pairs with lime zest and lime juice. So you get this bright green tea with the acid of the lime that provides a lot of vitamin C to support cortisol regulation from the adrenal glands. And then it uses also kind of like lime and coconut vibe, full fat coconut milk and gelatin. And it's a grass fed gelatin, which is a great support for our gut integrity as well. And works really well to add protein to it for like a breakfast pudding. And I top that with blackberries.
That is amazing.
Yes.
That is so cool. Well, clearly this is why you wrote this cookbook. My gosh, that's really impressive. And the other cool thing is it doesn't sound like it's crazy hard to make.
No, truly. It's like 5 ingredients. Yeah. And you do it in a blender, no heating. It's great. Awesome. Yeah. You literally pour a can of coconut milk, boop, 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 and blend it, set it in the fridge, and you have breakfast for 5 days or a snack.
Oh, wow. And, yeah. We love our recipes, but we don't love our kitchens and hanging out in them too much. I like hanging out in them with friends, but I don't want to be like in there by myself for hours. Not
fun. Couldn't agree more.
So I'm going to let everybody know this is going to be at jjvirgin.com/Allie Miller, and that's spelled A-L-I Miller. And we'll also link to both of your books. So you will get the 2-week meal plan there, and we'll link to both of your books. As you can tell, you're going to want to get this cookbook. Like, oh my gosh, that sounds amazing. So you'll definitely want to get that. And Allie, thank you so much for both like dealing with all of our tech problems the other day. And like, I was like, oh my God, she's going to like bail, be done with me.
No way. It's a bucket list thing. This is really cool, JJ. I'm like, oh, I get to be on JJ Virgin's podcast. Things are happening.
You know. All right. Again, it's jjvirgin.com/Allie Miller. And Allie, thank you so much for everything. You'll have to come back. And I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Welcome back. All right. I want to give you a couple takeaways from today's episode. And first takeaway is this, you know, there's stress and there's distress. They're very different. We are meant to have small amounts of stress. If you look at it like when you go and exercise, let's say you're doing some high intensity interval training, you do stress and then your body overcomes it and gets stronger. if you do resistance training, you break down a little bit and your body rebuilds. So that's good stress. Bad stress is like chronic, ongoing, no end in sight. And this could be mental. It can be physical. So first piece of this advice, action steps for today, is really look at your life and go, are there things in my life that are creating some low-grade stress that I could somehow get out of my life? And again, I was, you know, joking, like we can't send our kids off to like summer camp for the next 20 years, or tell our boss to hit the road. Well, sometimes you can, but you can change. A lot of this stuff is changing the way you perceive things or making some shifts in your life. So you have some me time, some self-care time, which is not selfish, it's selfless. So first look at what you might be able to remove, and then look at how you can change your perception, which is really the biggest part of stress, unless it's real physical stress. Most of this stuff is your perception. So that's step one. Step two is play around with. Now, what I like to do is step people into a ketogenic diet by going through the sugar impact diet. But I really love, there were a couple really great takeaways. And one of them would be with playing around with lowering your carbohydrates by first, of course, you know, going through the sugar impact diet, getting yourself back to a point where you're now a fat burner and you can miss that meal without any problems, using that whole foods approach that Ali talked about. I use shakes and I use bars. I use shake powder to ensure that I'm getting, because I'm not going to throw like a hunk of chicken in a blender, to ensure that I'm getting the protein piece of my protein, fat, and fiber trifecta for my morning meal. And I carry bars with me so I never get stuck eating some garbage while I'm traveling. And this is where I think these things are perfect to use. But then I strive for fresh vegetables, clean protein, eating as close to nature as possible. And that's just a great rule of thumb to put in, is how do I eat as close to nature as possible? And how do I emphasize savory rather than sweet? So I appreciate the natural sweetness of food. Again, I was jumping up and down as Ali was talking about that, because that was what I do in the Virgin Diet, or I'm sorry, in the Sugar Impact Diet, is to help you taper down your sugar and start to use sour and savory and spicy and salty so that you start to really appreciate those. And that sweet food just starts to taste too sweet, all those added sweeteners and all that stuff. And you can appreciate the natural sweetness of a blueberry or cinnamon. So if you're still struggling with sweet tooth, that's what I would highly recommend, is going through that process. Big. And then look at how you can incorporate in more whole foods into your diet. So I'm going to do a big shout out again to make sure you're grabbing Ali's meal plan at jjvirgin.com/Ali Miller, AliMiller. And we'll also put into the show notes link to her books, these cookbooks. Like, as she started to talk about, she's got the anti-anxiety book, but when she started talking about the anti-anxiety cookbook and those recipes, I'm like, oh my gosh, I could use my peak tea maca, matcha, I guess it's called. And we will put that link in the show notes too for their green teas, because they're amazing. And some of our collagen, and make that pudding. Like, that is crazy amazing. So definitely grab that meal plan. And I would highly recommend, you know, the more recipes you have, they just help you think more creatively about some different options that you can do. And if you heard her talk about, I make this and I have it for 5 days, such a smart thing. Because whenever we make food here at Tim and JJ, I guess that would be a gym household, the Tim and JJ household, we like to make extra protein. So we have that leftover for lunch. And if we make extra, like last night, we made a bunch of wild rice so that we could have that leftover for a couple days. Think about what you can do that you can just use in a variety of different ways. Makes life so much easier. You do not need to spend hours in the kitchen. All right. I will see you next time. And little ask, if you've not yet subscribed, just go to subscribe to JJ. And while you're there, you can leave a review so I can shout you out. And when you leave the review, put your name in there too, because everyone's got these crazy screen names and I never know who the heck it really is. So put your name in there so I can shout you out. All right. Thanks. See you next time. Bye.